Extra time.
Welcome back to the Extra Time podcast with Football Daily. We're throwing it back old school today. I am in the hosting hot seat and we are doing a vintage episode of How to Fix. This time it's Aston Villa and I'm joined by a couple of vintage presenters. Fine vintages, has to be said though. Christopher Hamill and Zach Jalab Hamster, how are you?
I'm absolutely cosmic, thank you. Really looking forward to this episode. Like you said, a bit nostalgic. Didn't get as much prep time in as I'd like, getting my excuses in early doors, but I am moving house. So I might have oversimplified some of my rationale, but I'm going to need Team FD and Aston Villa fans to forgive me, okay? Because moving with furniture, different ball game. Why didn't the new tenant just buy my wardrobes off me? I've got to disassemble flat pack furniture. I'm going out of my mind.
It is horrendous, mate. Moving with furniture is just the absolute pits. I had Zach Jalab helping me, Dave Orner, Milad helping me, and it was still horrendous. Kieran turned up hungover. The bloke could barely see. I didn't want him carrying anything. He looked like he could barely move. Jalab, how are you?
I'm right, thank you. Yeah, I've just moved into the new place. A little bit echoey, so I'm sorry if it's not quite perfect. So just trying to find out the right setup and everything at the moment. Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Enjoying it. Can't complain. I'm buzzing to be doing this as well. I absolutely love doing this, How to Fix, on the podcast back in the day, where we had a sporting director and everything. It's amazing.
Yes, this is going to be a vintage How to Fix episode. When I was researching this yesterday, I really wanted to try and do Villa some justice because this is a fantastic role. So today I'm putting myself in the shoes of Johan Langer, who is the sporting director of Aston Villa. Obviously, we're hunting for a manager. We're potentially hunting for some players. I also took to Twitter to ask Aston Villa fans what they wanted to see, who they wanted at the helm, who they wanted to sign. So we'll be doing some shout outs later on in the podcast. But I think it's important to give this Aston Villa situation a little bit of context and, to be honest with you, pay some respect to Dean Smith, who has done a bloody good job at Aston Villa. And I think every Aston Villa fan watching and listening at home will be saddened by his exit, even if they agree with it. Some Villa fans say that he should have had longer. Some Villa fans say that now is the right time to chop him, taking them as far as they can. But either way, whichever side of the fence you sit on, I think Villa fans love Dean Smith because not only is he a Villa fan himself, but also he's given everything to this club and he's given them some brilliant moments. So we've got to pay some respect to Dean Smith because last season, what did you boys think of them? I actually thought Villa were pretty good to watch last season. I enjoyed seeing them finish 11th, and I felt like they were moving in the right direction, Zachary.
Yeah, I mean, considering the season before that, they'd just stayed up by the skin of their teeth. They'd done really, really well. Jack Grealish kind of went supernova, and obviously Villa in general also improved elsewhere on the pitch. And I mean, towards the end of the season, it has to be said, they weren't so good. And weirdly, that also corresponded with the same period that Jack Grealish was injured as well. And I think maybe there were signs then showing that, okay, Villa without Jack Grealish need to figure out what to do because it's not going to look too pretty. I think it's something along the lines of losing six out of their remaining 12 out of 12 games or something like that, winning four and drawing four in that period without Grealish. And so that was maybe an early warning sign. But throughout the whole campaign in general, if you look at it, they did pretty well, especially when you consider all things that the season before. Yeah, they just about stayed up on the last day.
Yeah, mate, they're a very solid mid-table side. I was looking at some of their underlying numbers. They were 10th by expected goals. They were 12th by expected goals against. They ended up finishing 11th, so somewhere in the middle. And some of the signings really worked, didn't they? Ollie Watkins had a sensational season, 14 goals, 5 assists. I think everybody at home would say that's a huge success for an Aston Villa forward debuting in the Premier League. Jack Grealish, like you also mentioned there, just a creative machine, one of the best creators in European football, obviously, at the end of the season, got his move. I do want to point also to the defence, because this season, we'll come on to discuss a little bit further, but last season was much better. you know, the third most clean sheets in the league behind Manchester City and Chelsea, and no small part down to the fact Emi Martinez was an absolute beast. But also, you have to point to the, you know, the, some of the management and some of the coaching decisions by the likes of John Terry, who we might discuss in a little bit more detail further on in this podcast. But nevertheless, Christopher, last season felt like Villa were moving in the right direction. Maybe not so much after Christmas, like Zach said, because they have lost 18 games in 2021. And Perslow's statement very much points to 2021 as a problem. But what do you think went wrong in the summer? Or do you think last season maybe was glossing over a few cracks?
I think they had the third most clean sheets, didn't they, last season? Yeah. But you just said there, they're 12th for expected goals against. So I mean, they were heavily reliant on Martinez in certain games, maybe got the rub of the green defensively speaking in others. So maybe that 11th was slightly misleading in terms of their progress from the season before. But yes, they were entertaining. And I think they went about replacing Jack Grealish in the right way this summer. Not great for Dean Smith that Buendia and the likes of Leon Bailey haven't been able to get on the pitch at the same time, I guess, and there's been certain injuries or, you know, issues regarding COVID, especially with Buendia and that whole sort of comma bowl debacle. And yeah, they've suffered defensively speaking, despite switching to a slightly more conservative system, you know, 5-3-2, 3-5-2, whatever you want to call it. It's not really, the change in system didn't really pay off for Dean Smith, did it? And this season, they're conceding far too many shots per game. Like, that gap between the fullback and the centre back has been huge on occasion, and something that other teams have been able to regularly exploit. They've been bad, seriously bad at defending set pieces. I think they've conceded the second most in the Premier League at the time of recording, and their defending in transition has been bad. And I think the latter points towards the players struggling to find their way in this new system, which is always going to happen. You know, it's not that it's been badly coached, or it was badly coached even by the likes of Dean Smith and Craig Shakespeare, two excellent coaches in their own right. It was just a new system. And I think maybe he'd done enough to maybe try and incorporate that a little bit better. But Aston Villa under Perslow, it seems like they're, you know, really ambitious at the moment. And, you know, now that European football is escaping them, they're addressing the issue at source. But I think maybe where Aston Villa want to go and where they are at current, there's probably a bit of this discrepancy there, at least in my eyes. But yeah, he can leave with his head held high. I mean, we're going to move on to who we think should take over soon. And I think it's really interesting because I think the candidates are, or the favourites are, vastly different from one another, at least looking at the top five. And it doesn't really point towards a really coherent vision for the club, in my opinion. And if, you know, if Steven Gerrard, for example, replaces Dean Smith, do they stand any better chance of reaching the top 10? Not in my eyes, but that's something we can debate shortly.
Yeah, I mean, just to bring it back to this season's results, and I think there were a couple of key turning points in the summer. Obviously, the sale of Jack Grealish we can point to as being very obvious. It's always hard to replace your leading man. We've seen multiple teams try and fail to do it in the past. It almost feels reminiscent of that Gareth Bale sale at Tottenham Hotspur. And I was re-watching that Christian Perslow, who is, of course, the Aston Villa chief executive today, when he released that video statement, which I thought was a really good idea, actually. And I thought the openness came across really well at the time, and he talked about, you know, signing three players to cover for the output of one exceptional player. And like you said, Chris, Leon Bailey has struggled so far this season, when he was bought in for, what was it, close to £30 million, and last season his numbers look pretty good. 17 goal involvements in 25 Bundesliga starts. Danny Ings, similarly, last season, huge amount of goal output at Southampton, proven in the Premier League. I think at £25 million, we all thought that was going to be a huge W. 26 starts, 12 goals, 4 assists last season. He was going at 0.5 or 0.4 expected goals and assists. And, of course, Emiliano Buendia, who was being linked to Arsenal at £35 million, we all said was a good move. So I don't think we can sit back and say any of the transfers in the summer were a problem. Obviously, yeah, the sale,
I would also
help.
I'd take issue with anyone that says they've been bad signings, just because they've not
hit
form as of yet. Exactly. And And the problem is at the other end of the field, right? They've conceded 20 goals already by match day. What are we? 11. I think that it took until 20 games in last season to concede 20.
Yeah, and I do think that that is also down to coaches leaving Aston Villa, and we can point to the exit of John Terry, very obviously, who is kind of individual teams coach and focused a lot of one-to-one training. But more importantly, I would say Richard O'Kelly, who left and has been Dean Smith's assistant for a decade at this point, left 2 days before the start of the season after, I mean, there's mixed reports. I was reading an article this morning that kind of hinted that he was being told that he would have to work more heavily with the under-23s than the first team as things started to progress, and he wasn't too keen to do that. But I would say Richard O'Kelly leaving and John Terry leaving were two pretty sizable hammer blows alongside Jack Grealish leaving before you even get to the turnover of players that we've just spoken about. And they might turn out to be good signings, but they haven't hit the ground running. You know, Leon Bailey started 2 games so far this season in the Premier League, which is not what they are expecting, is it? Buendia has got 1 goal, 1 assist from 7 starts. He's running at about 0.3 expected goals and assists per 90. Hasn't looked brilliant. But like you said, Chris, the problem is really at the other end. I mean, 18th for goals conceded in the league, 14th for expected goals against. It's not good enough defensively, and he's tried different things. Like, I'm looking at these results here. He tried dropping Tyrone Mings, didn't he, for the West Ham game at home, which is a huge decision, by the way. Very much one of the leadership group at Aston Villa, and they still shipped 4 goals. I know we can point to the red card there. In that first half against Southampton at the weekend, I thought they were shameful, Zach. I mean, what have you made of Aston Villa so far this season?
Yeah, I think it was always going to happen when you're signing three players who are going to be adding to your attack, right? That's essentially out of the four or five positions you have going forward, three of them are new players. And it's always going to take time for them to adapt. And I think Bailey's been unfortunate with injuries. I actually think when he's been on the pitch, he's been really good. And so picking up an injury so early in the season at a brand new club is never a great way to start off your career. As Chris mentioned, the Condobol staff of Buendia, another really disappointing thing that's happened there. And so when you've got so many new players all trying to mix in at once, it's never going to be easy. It's not just like adding one creative player and everyone else is still there from the previous season. But yeah, no, I think the attack will eventually come good. The issue is definitely the defence. We've spoken many a times about how we think Tyrone Mings probably is slightly overrated with how people rate him in the Premier League. And actually, Concert is the better of them. Even House has appeared during the Premier League season over Tyrone Mings and done, I mean, against Manchester United, did a better job when they managed to get a 1-0 win. I mean, they were probably lucky to come out with a win in that game, to be quite honest. But yeah, those recent 5 results just haven't been good enough. When I watched, I was lucky enough to go to the Spurs game at the Spurs ground when they played, and in the first half I thought they were okay, Villa, and then in the second half they actually got totally dominated by a Nuno Spurs, which says a lot, to be quite honest, and they got very, very dominated by Heung-Min Son down the left flank. And yeah, it's been a bit weird because I actually thought they started the season okay. I thought Matty Cash came on really, really well at the right back position. I think Matt Target is an okay left back. I don't necessarily think he's amazing. And then you go to the centre backs. I think Concert is fine. I think he's very good. Last year he had a very good year. Tyrone Mings is, if you are trying to go for European football, which supposedly they want to do, I don't think Tyrone Mings is good enough for you there. He is okay on the ball. I don't think he's a great defender, especially in one-on-one situations. And when he's on the ball, I think a lot of people applaud him sometimes for being a decent distributor, when in reality, I think he just clears it most of the time just to get rid of any risk, which is fine to a certain degree. However, if they're trying to play from the back, which at times Villa look like they're trying to do, it's not working out. And so
I do think as well, though, just to point out, I know that we are hammering the defence here. The attack hasn't been great either. They're 17th in the league for expected goals. Like, they've only scored more than one.
But the attack was always going
twice this season, or three times this season in 11 games?
But when you lose your, like, the way Villa was set up with Jack Grealish, it is literally everything went through him, whether that was creating a chance or him finishing off the chance himself. Like, everything went through him, and him linking up with Ollie Watkins, it all went through Jack Grealish. And that left flank, I looked onto where their attacking phases come down last season, and it is all down that left flank. There's not even a single arrow going down the right. And so it was to be expected. It could definitely be better than it is, right? It was expected to be bad. But did you think
the sacking of Dean Smith was the right time then? Do you think now is the right time to sack Dean Smith? Because he has gone through dark patches before. I think back to the pre-lockdown when they were an absolute mess. Mm. I think back to when he first took over at Aston Villa around about sort of March time. Things were getting a bit funny. They weren't sure whether they were going to make those playoff positions and then put together that incredible run, of course. So there's been dark periods under Dean Smith before. Do you think now was the right time? He wasn't going to recover? It was one too many?
I think maybe what Villa looked at as well has seen that a few clubs have sacked their managers. And that the available managers that, because they've obviously been thinking about whether to make a change, and then they've looked at, you know, Norwich have just fired their guy, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Man United's under pressure, and elsewhere around the leagues as well, around the continent, and so they're looking at maybe these candidates out there and thinking, look, if we don't make a decision soon about Dean Smith, the guys that we can maybe get in to replace him aren't going to be available in, say, a month's time when we give him the rest of November to see whether it goes well. And if it doesn't go well, then we're left with maybe the ones, essentially. And so it's a little bit of maybe a Watford approach, I think. Like, personally, I think they should have maybe given him a little bit more time. I think from what he's done and his time at Aston Villa, getting them back into the Premier League and everything, and obviously keeping them up and having a really good year last year, I think he probably deserved a little bit more time. However, I do understand the kind of approach of wanting to do it now rather than maybe waiting for another four more losses in a row and really being in a relegation battle.
I think what he suffered from is the other ambitious, aspirational clubs around the league who have maybe spent less, are performing better than them. Leicester maybe not so much this season. They're probably the blueprint though, aren't they? Leicester for an Aston Villa at current in terms of breaking into the top six, securing football in European football in back-to-back seasons, thinking, we've spent £320 million here. Yes, we've lost our best player, but so have, you know, Leicester in previous seasons, Harry Maguire, Riyad Mahrez. West Ham will probably lose Declan Rice moving forward, won't they? And they've dealt with a large squad turnover in recent years as well. And yeah, after that £320 million spend, they're probably asking the hierarchy or Perslow, whoever it is, what more can we do? What's the biggest discrepancy between us and those sides? You know, one of them's just dispatched us 4-1, and they've probably just boiled it down to Dean Smith. And when you have a manager who is desperately trying to change his system in order to reverse the landslide of results throughout 2021, it did start to feel a little bit inevitable. Not because of how he would maybe fare over the course of the season, but because Aston Villa clearly think they've spent enough to warrant a real charge at European football, and he's not quite meeting that criteria.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because he's so popular as well with the players and fans and club as a whole, isn't he? Like, I think back to the stories of him, you know, as a Villa fan, his dad being a steward, and I think back to the scenes of him getting promoted and Jack Grealish being the captain in those photos. So it's an emotional call as well, isn't it? It's an emotional call, but it feels like what they've done, and we're seeing clubs increasingly do now, is rather than sack him when things are totally catastrophic, sack him earlier with the hope of being able to recover quicker. And I do think this is one of the most appealing roles in European football. It has to be said, I think this is potentially the best opportunity in the Premier League vacant now, or at least on edge. I think it's a squad that is of a decent age. It's a squad that is going to be readily improved because the owners have large amounts of money. It's a squad...
has quality.
It's a squad that, it's definitely already got quality, but the training ground is very, very good. I went there very recently. The youth setup is improving. I think that the goal very clearly is to make European football for Aston Villa, and the right person could take them there. I do think it's a risk this sacking now, because Dean Smith would have kept them up. Dean Smith would have kept Aston Villa in the Premier League. And if this goes horribly wrong, there is a very real sort of aspect of them getting sucked into a relegation dogfight. I don't think that'll happen. But if I was a manager looking at available jobs across Europe, I'd see big budget, decent squad, unlikely to go down, going to have an incredible fan base. The stadium's really good in a city that's football mad. I'd be thinking this is an... I bet Christian Perslow's office is overflowing with job applications. I really do. Because I think this is a great opportunity. Just before we move into the manager's chat, a note to say that we recorded this the day before Stevie G officially got announced as Aston Villa boss. So bear that in mind when the boys are trying to persuade me to pick a manager. Okay? Let's crack on with the show. And we can have a look now. I've loaded up some of the favourites for the role. Before we get into your pitches, into me, as I said earlier, I am the sporting director of Aston Villa right now. I've just told you all of the positives about them. You're going to bring me your candidates as my sort of advisory board, I suppose. Okay. Because the manager shortlist I'm looking at now, we've got Stevie G in at favourite. We've got John Terry, second favourite. Frank Lampard, Hjumland, Martinez, Hasenhüttl, Potter, Tedesco and Thomas Frank as the top 10. Now, I think we should just run through a couple of these names because I've seen who you are suggesting and I think we should discount the other names on here. Like John Terry... John Terry's not going to get this Aston Villa role. He left the club in the summer in the hope of sort of improving his individual prospects, spending more time with his family. I think if he was still at the club, you know, an interim role might have been there while they waited to hire a new coach. But they're not going to bring John Terry back when he left the club 2 months ago, right? I don't want you to think about some of the other names in there, guys. Hasenhüttl, potentially. Martinez also in there.
Martinez would be interesting. I mean, supposedly he wants to return to the Premier League, but I think he's enjoying this Belgian side. And I think the next time they play, which is obviously literally in about a year and a month's time, I think that'll be the last kind of golden generation of Belgium's chance of
the next time they play at a World Cup. You mean, yeah?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's going to be the last time for players like the Hazards, the Romelu Lukaku, maybe until, because the next one he'll be 32 years old, and like not necessarily maybe going towards the end of his prime. Kevin De Bruyne will be much older. So these stars, like I very much doubt that Roberto Martinez is looking to stay at the Belgian job after a year's time. And so I think, yeah, he wouldn't want to leave just yet, personally. I think he's...
What about Hasenhüttl then? What about Hasenhüttl? Because I look at that Southampton squad, and he's obviously very happy. He's got a contract until 2024. I think they've only lost twice this season. And behind the scenes, I know that he pretty much runs everything. He's reinvigorated the scouting, he's reinvigorated the academy, how the team trains. Behind the scenes, he's massively important. But do you think this would be a step up, Southampton to Villa, or there's a bigger step to be made there, Hamster?
Mate, if I was Hasenhüttl, I'd start walking there right now.
Really? Would you actually?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I feel like I don't want to highlight the obvious here and waste time, but Southampton are scrimping, aren't they? They are looking to sell the club. I think still actively looking to sell the club. And at the moment, it's all about maximising young prospects at Southampton and staying around mid-table. Like, we've used this word before on this show. They're not hugely aspirational, and they're mainly functional as a result of Hasenhüttl's very hands-on approach. Like, he's a very, very good coach. And if you're looking for someone to maximise an attack, Hasenhüttl has got a long-standing history of doing so. And this is a side that I think is geared to play in transition. Like, they've not got a lot of possession players, let's call them. That's a little bit reductive. There's some very good footballers in there. But what they've got a lot of is speed on the break, right? There's some people in there, some players in there that can be devastating on the counter. And I feel that is quite simpatico with how Hasenhüttl likes to play. Like, he's all about verticality. He's all about speed of thought, taking a minimal amount of touches and getting in an area where he can cause the maximum amount of problems. Like, I think the talent suits him quite well. So if I was Perslow, I would be seriously considering him. I don't know how much it would take to get him out of Southampton. I imagine he's not on huge wages. Yeah, so it might be too much to ask at this point in the season, right, to kind of pursue him.
What about Thomas Frank? Because, you know, Brentford are, they're in a bit of a muddy situation right now. They're on their worst run, I believe, since 2016. They've won one of their last seven. Some of the results have been shocking. You know, that weekend loss at home to Norwich. I think back to Burnley thumping them pretty comprehensively recently.
I know, but
they've also played Chelsea, though, as well at that time, and Liverpool. Like, they've had some tough games.
But this would also be a step up, wouldn't it? This would be a step up for Thomas Frank. And I think Thomas Frank is an exciting young manager as well.
I think there's no way Thomas Frank leaves this Brentford project at
current.
I think he's probably in it for the long haul as well. I can imagine Brentford as well being perfectly comfortable with getting relegated or the prospect of relegation still looming deep into the season and backing Frank to take them down and bring them back up again. This is their first top flight season in 75 years, isn't it? They're not even a yo-yo club. This is the pinnacle of their existence. Well, you know, at least pre my knowledge. As to where they've been as a club in the modern era. So I think they're just, he'll be happy to roll the dice, knowing full well that they'll back him in future campaigns. Like, who else is on there? Because I'm seeing
Graham
Tedesco,
Potter
seeing
is at
Potter.
16-1. Well, I think Potter, though, is ready for a slightly more significant step up than anybody else. Although I would have said something similar about Ralph Hasenhüttl, to be honest with you. I think Graham Potter might be looking and saying, okay, in the last 6 weeks I've been linked with United, I've been linked with Tottenham. Do I risk taking the Villa job?
I tell you who would bite your hand off for this job right now, happily. Frank Lampard. This is like the ideal.
Of course, this would be an unbelievable opportunity for Lampard.
Because I think personally, like I've seen he's been linked with Norwich, and I think personally he will think he's kind of better than Norwich. I mean, literally worth double the amount that they're worth. But I think the way to go for him to believe he's just obviously managed Chelsea for 2 years in the Champions League and such, and then drop down to maybe a relegation club that's probably going to be relegated, I think he's thinking, like, if I can get a Villa job right now, it'd bite your hand off happily.
All right, then. So those were some of the outside shouts. What I'm now going to ask you to do is pitch me your shouts for what I have described as the best opportunity in the Premier League, one of the best open vacant roles across Europe as sporting director. I'm going to come to you first, Zachary. Who are you bringing me as one of my chief advisors?
So, originally, I want to put this out there, I wanted to go with Kasper Schlumand. I think that's how it's pronounced. But literally as I suggested it, he pulled himself out of the job. So I had to then change. And I've gone with something that Chris isn't going to be too happy with, Stephen Gerrard. Who is also the bookie's favourite. Who is the bookie's favourite at the moment?
Yes.
And now, I kind of think the Aston Villa squad right now would fit the way that he wants to play. Like, I was, before this, I'll be honest, I didn't know too much of the way his Rangers kind of play at the moment. And it's very much in the kind of modern era of football. He wants to dominate the ball, possession based, and he wants his fullbacks attacking, with his midfielders as well going in. Pushing into it, he deploys either a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 for more games that he wants to be a bit more defensive with. And he is very interesting. Now, I know there's a lot of questions, and I think deservedly so. I think it's deservedly so. Like, he doesn't necessarily have the top level experience. He's never managed in the Premier League, and I completely get that. But his Rangers side so far, I think have been pretty impressive. He's managed nearly 200 games for them. He's won 125. He's drawn 42, and he's lost only 26 matches. He's got a win rate of 64.77%. And I think he's also got a very good link with Aston Villa as well within his squad. Gary McAllister was the assistant to Gerard Houllier at Aston Villa. Gerard's doctor was also the doctor at Aston Villa previously as well. Perso's also worked with Gerard at Liverpool as managing director, so he has that relationship there. Mm-hmm. And he also wants the Liverpool job eventually. I think it's a fantastic stepping stone, because he said many times right now he's not ready for Liverpool, and obviously Liverpool fans don't want him. They've got Jurgen Klopp, and maybe after Jurgen Klopp, it could be rumoured for Gerard, but this would be a perfect stepping stone. Get back into the Premier League. You've got a club
here. I have to say, You've made a good point, and I do, you know, Christian Perslow, I'm going to have a meeting with him in 10 minutes, and he's going to like Stevie G because he likes him and he's worked with him at Liverpool, and Gary McAllister, and I agree with the doctor and stuff like that. Chris, I want to come to you, though, and I'm going to say,
Is
Steven Gerrard an immediate upgrade on Dean Smith?
Well, I'm going to contradict myself here because I want to present two lines of argument. So firstly, I want to sort of defend the stature even of Rangers. And you know, this pains me to do so because a lot of people out there are talking about Aston Villa like there'd be a significant upgrade. And yes, the quality of football in the Premier League is significantly better than that in Scotland. But in terms of a manager's standing, in terms of a club's standing, I think Premier League fans are really overlooking just what a global unit Rangers are, for want of a better phrase, and the sort of challenges that he's presented with at Rangers, such as, you know, playing in European competition season in, season out. Of course, for the first time in 12 years, I believe, the winner of the SBFL this season will be guaranteed group stage football in the Champions League, which is, I imagine, hugely appealing to Steven Gerrard if he can stay, fend off Postecoglou, get the job done. And I don't think his apprenticeship's up. Like, there's a vibe I'm getting that he's been there, done that, completed it, mate, with his time in Scotland, when he's actually only won one of 9 trophies available. And that was when he was facing off with Neil Lennon, who should never have been re-employed.
The disrespect to Neil.
Neil was a fine coach, but didn't belong in this decade, and that is, like, no disrespect to him. But imagine going from Brendan Rodgers, you know, behind the scenes to Neil Lennon. Like, the fact the board thought that was an acceptable progression, it still boggles me. But anyway, I'm going to move on to my second line of thought, because
here we go.
Yeah, I just don't think he's ready for Aston Villa. Not that. Not that he's
Do you
not
think
ready,
that,
but
I just don't think there's a... No, I struggle to identify a better stepping stone opportunity than going from Rangers to Villa.
Yeah, but we're representing Aston Villa here, Joseph. We shouldn't be putting ourselves forward as
really
any
true.
Stepping
Very
really
good
well
point
said,
there.
Actually.
It's a great point there, Chris. It's a great point.
And Jurgen Klopp's contract is up in 2024. It's been pretty well publicised that that's when Steven Gerrard envisages getting a good go at that job. And if he goes to Aston Villa and it goes tits up for him, then, you know, risky. But also very risky for Aston Villa to put themselves forward as some sort of... pet project for Steven Gerrard.
True.
Like, one, I think
we're
Rangers,
representing the Villa.
Exactly. A lot of responsibility. He's got a lot more to achieve there. But two, and as I was trying to progress into my second line of thought, but not doing so with a great amount of clarity, like, there is better candidates out there right now that Aston Villa should be considering, like, that have stronger CVs, that have a wealth of knowledge from different leagues that Steven Gerrard just doesn't have at the moment. I think Christian Perslow's fanboying a little bit. He worked with him at Liverpool. There's clearly something, you know, he taps into... He's got icon syndrome, is basically what I'm getting at. Like, it's not worked with Lampard. It's not worked with Thierry Henry.
Well, saying it's not worked, I think it's a bit harsh.
But,
like, I think...
Well, let's define what work means in this context, because what work means here is securing Aston Villa European football. Steven Gerrard,
but not this season. Like, that's not going to happen. Like, any manager that comes in right now this season is not going to be securing Aston Villa.
No, but a footballer that comes in under this regime, I do believe, has to be competing with a Brighton and a Wolves for that 8th spot. Like, those two teams are in and around that realm right now. Palace are pushing for it. Wolves want it. Brighton want it. There's no reason that Aston Villa, given the level of investment and top quality squad they've got at the moment... I say top quality, it comparatively to those other sides, shouldn't be pushing for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that sort of feeds into my rationale as to why Steven Gerrard should probably be on the shortlist. But if I'm drawing up 10, wouldn't make my final 5 names.
Oh, OK. So we've got Chief Advisor 1 disagreeing strongly with Chief Advisor 2. So, Chris, I need... Who are you bringing to the table then? You've shit on Gerrard. Who's coming in?
Sounds a bit strong. I think I've, you know, very...
yeah, true.
I've dismantled it in a very articulate way, is how I'd put it. I mean, we've already discussed Hasenhüttl. I think there's There's a lot to be said for him coming in. I think a big, big push for Graham Potter would be ambitious, but exactly the sort of move that they should be seen to be, you know, trying to carry out. Mm. And the optics of that would play very well with fans around the country. But I ultimately went for a man that I backed to take over Crystal Palace in the summer, and that is Lucien Favre, because, and as Zach alluded to there, it's going to be a little bit of a repair job from now until the end of the season. Even if that's all he's bought in for, like, he's a safe pair of hands to transition into the next season where we can revisit our goals, right, our KPIs in the next boardroom meeting. But I like Lucien Favre. Like, he's tactically versatile. We saw at Dortmund, he's not wed to any one formation, so he's not going to come in like Steven Gerrard and be like, I need to play a Jurgen Klopp full throttle 4-3-3 because I want that job in 2024. I think that leads to Favre getting the best out of the talent that he has at his disposal. Like, he played a 4-2-3-1 last season. He also played 3 at the back or 5 at the back, however you want to phrase it. There's some similarities with that Dortmund squad and the current personnel at Aston Villa in the fact that they have, you know, forward-thinking fullbacks. I think both of these sides are geared to hurting the opposition in transition. They want to stretch play by being wide. We saw Favre execute that perfectly at Dortmund. And yeah, I don't want to go on too much because I'm sure you've got a few questions and I'll give you some retorts. But he's got such a high football IQ. I would want that breadth, that wealth of knowledge to come through my club rather than be, like I said before, a stepping stone for Gerrard to go to Liverpool.
I'm definitely interested by Lucien Favre, and I'm partly also intrigued as to why talks broke down at the 11th hour with Crystal Palace in the summer, because I do think that was a good opportunity at the time, given the level of investment and the quality of players they were bringing into the club. So I would be intrigued to hear from Favre. Obviously, we can't do that. We don't have Favre's number, and Chris is only playing at being a chief advisor. But I do wonder whether or not Favre is interested in a job in the Premier League at that level, or whether or not there was something behind the scenes at Palace that didn't work. But I agree, I really like Favre's experience level coming into this side. I think the squad is pretty perfectly set up for him.
Yeah, but also, his Dortmund's defence was shambolic at times. And one of the things we do need to fix is our defence.
When he first came in, he improved it.
Exactly. In the two successive seasons from, you know, when he took over, expected goals against improved season on season. It was only really towards the tail end of his tenure in his third season that he got the boot. And yeah, so for two seasons he successfully shored up that defence while supercharging the attack, which he was getting like 2.4 goals a game out of that Dortmund side. Obviously, he had Haaland, he had Sancho, he had Marco Reus. There's some exceptional attacking talent in there. I'm not saying that he would achieve 2.5 goals a game with this Aston Villa side, but he does have a good track record of improving sides defensively. They might be a little bit passive. They might not be, Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp pressing machines. But they often, like at Nice and at Gladbach, are very good at defending their own box, which we've seen Aston Villa struggle with this season. And then they are very good at countering sides orienteering their attack around, you know, countering. So I think it's set up well for him.
This is a really interesting call, because what we've got here is, on one hand, a potential project manager coming to the club who's at a younger development stage of his career, but is very exciting. And on the other hand, we've got the more experienced, steady hand who's going to likely come in, steady the ship, but isn't going to be here for the long haul. I think it's very intriguing that you've both pitched those styles of managers. I have to say, I do think that Graham Potter is the outstanding candidate, and I know it's extremely punchy, but if you could get him, it would be incredible. And I'm surprised neither of you went with Hasenhüttl. I think I've got Perslow here. Perslow's badgering me for Gerrard. He won't stop talking about Gerrard. I didn't leak that memo that you sent me, Chris, saying that Perslow's got icon fever or whatever it is called to him. But I think I'm going to side on the side of Favre. I do think I'm going to side on the side of Favre, because I just think that Steven Gerrard is a risk, and this season we have to get this appointment right. Christian Perzo's first appointment was Dean Smith. It went really well. This appointment has to be done correctly. And I think Steven Gerrard is a risk not quite worth taking. I don't think the upside for Gerrard is quite worth the risk. Whereas Favre, a slightly steadier pair of hands, I'm going to go on that side of the fence, I'm afraid, Zachary. Now, what I also asked was Villa fans on Twitter to send me who they would like to see, because I think it's very important to see who the fans want to come in. And I've gathered a few responses here. We've got Dom Phillips. He said, number one candidate would be Graham Potter or Ten Hag. Now, I saw a lot of Villa fans saying they wanted Ten Hag. I just think it's totally unrealistic. Unrealistic. I mean, the guy's rejected Barcelona. He won't go to United. I think in the past he had reservations about going to Bayern Munich again until the time was right. So I think that's too punchy for Villa. But I agree with Dom, who suggested Potter. The Villa Vision said Ralf Hasenhüttl, who we've already spoken about in depth. I think that'd be a really good choice. John McGod said number one choice would be Favre after what he did at Mönchengladbach and Nice, but haven't any links. Yeah, John will be happy with Chris's selection and my selection now. And then Shaz Nat also says number one choice of manager would be Erik ten Hag, but not sure that would happen. Next would be Lucien Favre. So not only am I listening to a chief advisor here, I'm also taking on the opinions of Aston Villa fans online. But I'm not only
I hope it goes to
up, I'll be honest. I apologise there. Yeah, we're not only after a manager, although we have and no, will spend not. The majority of the chat speaking about that position. I'm also after a few players, because in the summer I wasn't overly happy with the recruitment, it has to be said. I think very clearly they should have identified, and did identify to a level, the need for a central midfielder. Of course, having two bids rejected for James Ward-Prowse in that position signifies that quite strongly. I'm also interested, Zach, you mentioned it earlier about Matty Target. I think young left-back competition would be quite interesting. There may be a wild card as well, but I'm willing to be surprised by your guys' suggestions as to which players you think Villa need to sign, maybe in January, maybe it's a slightly more longer-term plan next summer. Zach, I'm coming to you with what will be... Do you want to do all three, or do you want to just go name by name? We'll go one to one to one to one.
I think one to one to one, yeah.
We'll okay, go one let's to one do one. That. What's your first name?
So my first name is a central defender, Piers Schurz, Dutch international who plays for
Punchy,
Ajax.
Punchy, man. Now,
it is. I'll give you a little profile on him quickly, just so about him. He's obviously 6'3", 21 years old. He's about to turn 22, though. And he's only had two starts this season. He signed a new contract back in January the 15th until 2025. But I think it's worth also remembering right now what centre-backs Villa have at the moment. Tuan Zabi, Tyrone Mings, Ezri Konsa and House. Now, I'll be honest, he hasn't been great since his contract renewal, it has to be said. But at his peak, which was about a year ago, around the time he signed his contract, in December 2020, when he played against Liverpool as well in the Champions League, he was really, really good. He's also had links as well to Liverpool, to Bayern Munich and to Juventus, but those have died down after the summer. Now, he defended really, really well against Sadio Mane and Jota in the Champions League last season, two of the fantastic forwards in the Premier League. So we've seen him, what he's like against Premier League forwards. Now, it also has to be said, isn't amazing in the air, considering he's 6'3". He's completing
You're not really selling him, Jelav.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, mate. You're shitting on your own. You're bringing me a player. You're shitting on your own scout report here.
I'm just giving you the details first, okay? He's averaging about a 55% aerial win rate in the air, which for his height,
and that's
isn't
in the Dutch
great,
league.
But I think, you know, it can be improved. It can be improved with training. You know, we'll send him out there for every balls in the air and make sure he wins them. Okay, but one thing he is really, really good at is with the ball at his feet. Last season he was completing 3.3 long balls per 90. Mings, who does quite a lot of the passing for Villa, was only completing 2.7. He's got a 91% pass accuracy, Mings 78%. And he's also very, very good at defending in one-on-one situations. His tackling is really good, 2.3 tackles per 90 in a side with dominant possession. But he's also got a very good particular strength, I think, at winning the ball in from behind. Now, partially it's maybe because he's not necessarily the slowest centre-back, but he's not necessarily rapid either. And so sometimes if they get past him or whatever, he's able to win the ball from behind.
In from behind, do you mean like last-ditch tackles?
No, it's not necessarily a last-ditch tackle. It's more as in...
Is it a Wan-Bissaka hook?
Kind of. It's like they're side by side, right? And he will go but like they look like they might be about to get ahead and he's able to basically get the ball. It's very hard to explain without watching.
Good recovery speed.
Good recovery tackle, I think maybe. Okay. Because he's not the quickest. He isn't the quickest. Like he's not like a
And are you rapper. Suggesting this is a January signing, or are you suggesting Axel Tuanzebe's loan is up in the summer?
Yes. Yes, exactly, exactly. Because the second Tuanzebe goes, they've only got three centre-backs, unless they go down into the youth team. Now, he can also deal with very high-pressure situations as well, whether that's him being high-pressed or taking the ball into midfield. He's very strong.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen him play a few games. Does remind me a bit of Matthijs de Ligt.
He's also, he's not a million miles away from De Ligt, to be quite honest. And that's not just
he's not at that level yet.
Not yet. I mean, De Ligt is ridiculous for his age and everything. But considering he's only just about to turn 22, there's a lot of improvement that can be done here, especially if he's coached well.
Okay.
Now, last December, there were rumours, essentially when he was at his peak, there were rumours of £27 million for him. So I think... you may be able to get a little bit less. The only issue is...
even though he signed a new contract.
That's what I was about to say. He has just signed a new contract. But he isn't playing much at the moment. Five sub appearances. So, that's my...
Your first pitch is a centre-back, Per Schurz, out of Ajax. I think it's punchy. Do you have a riposte for a centre-back potentially, Chris? Or another position you think needs strengthening?
Yeah, I spent significantly less time on this than I did on researching reasons that Steven Gerrard shouldn't get the job and why Lucien Favre should.
You won that battle.
I've tried to keep
it. I didn't know he was picking Lucien Favre. I'll be honest.
It was worth it. It was worth it. The juice was worth the squeeze. Part of my thinking to transfers in general was that it's going to have to be... we can't be lavish with our spending, right? Because like I said earlier, since the 1920 season, Villa have spent £320 million, enough to put together, or it should have been enough to put together a squad that could compete for the top half of the table in the Premier League. So, I mean, having said that, my defenders are probably a little bit more costly than the rest of my players. But I've drawn up a shortlist. And from Jonathan Tarr, Maxence Lacroix, William Saliba and Sven Botman. I thought Saliba might be the most cost-effective candidate
to buy
with a skill set that he's been loaned out to Nice, to Marseille. Arteta froze him out the squad for the first 6 months. There was a little bit of reticence there from him. He said, "Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Should have included him in Arsenal's Europa League squad." Like, if you offered Arsenal, I think probably 15 to 20, which is what they paid for him, I imagine you could get him. And he's been really impressive for Marseille this season. Not the most proactive defender, but Ezre Konsa can do that. Matty Cash's defensive output's good. Matty Target, you know, a little bit more of a conservative left back. I know he does get foot. He does bomb up and down. But anyway, you know what I'm saying. But William Saliba's strengths is incredible distribution, okay? His progressive passes, his carries are right up there with Europe's best at current. This would, to answer one of your earlier questions, Joseph, definitely be a signing for next summer. But having someone like Saliba would definitely help not having the most, the finest distributors from deep. And John McGinn's very good, but a little bit more box to box than just someone who sits right. And it's the same with Douglas Luiz, really. They've not got a lights out playmaker, let's say. But having Saliba in there would maybe help a little bit with that. I like Jonathan Tarr as well. Supremely talented distributor, and they've dealt with Leverkusen in the past. They obviously got Bailey out Leverkusen for 30 mil. I don't think it cost as much to get Jonathan Tarr. I don't know when his contract expires. Probably should have had a look at that.
I think pretty soon.
But yeah, I would probably opt for one of those two. I mean, like the likes of... I also went to Ajax like you, Jelab, and looked at, you know, Jurrien Timber and Lisandro Martinez, but they're going to go to super clubs, I think, in the next couple of years. So we should probably be looking at a level down, but that's not to say we can't be smart about it. And I think one of those guys
Saliba's an interesting one. I think Arsenal fans will be sat there sweating and stewing about the Saliba situation. I don't believe he's signed that new contract yet. So it might be worth a flutter at William Saliba. I want to put forward Shaz Nat on Twitter's suggestion of Joe Gomez and immediately shoot it down. Ooh, because that's just...
Good God, mate.
I think it's just too punchy. Villa fans coming in extremely punchy. I also want to put together John McGod's suggestion of James Tarkowski, who is, of course, available on a free transfer in the summer and reports suggest from Burnley.
No, he's going to Newcastle, though, isn't he, Joe? That's you're moonlighting as both Newcastle... and Villa's director of football.
Because, of course, James Tarkowski, there was a few reports earlier, or a couple of months ago, that there was a gentleman's agreement in place with Burnley that he could leave as early as January. Now, I would be interested in a player like James Tarkowski, but I do believe that William Saliba is the side of the fence that I'm going to fall down on here. I do like Schürrle. But I don't think we're going to get your suggestion of Schürrle either. I think the links to the likes of Liverpool and Bayern Munich are very strong. So I think they're both very optimistic, to be honest with you. I'm not overly sold on either of them, but I think a centre-back is very much a position we will be targeting.
What do you think to commit in, if both me and Zach are happy with Tarr, £30 million bid for him in the summer?
Yeah, I would be happy with Jonathan Tarr, I mean, I think the guy it's his time wins... now, isn't it?
Yeah, over 70% of his headers, which has been a huge issue. Well, clearing the box is an issue for Aston Villa, despite that being one of the things that Tyrone Mings excels at.
I was going to say that.
He's got a great short to medium passing game. I think he's over 55 passes per game with a 90% pass accuracy, Jonathan Tarr. So he just gives that Villa defence the ability to play it out with greater consistency, which is what they're lacking at the minute, isn't it?
I've just checked his contract situation. He's just signed one in September.
Ah, that's a big problem. Bastard!
2025.
I'll get on the phone with Christian. I'll get on the phone with the Leverkusen boys and just see if there's any sort of buyout clause within that contract that could be exploited. We're going to go on to the next position then. This was a position suggested by Dom Phillips, who thinks a high-energy left-back option. And Zach,
yes, sir.
I believe you are going to present a fullback to me.
Indeed. Well, a fullback, he can do it all, to be quite honest. Joachim Mill. I think it's pronounced Mill. There's one pronunciation here that I've heard. It's mental, but I think it's Mill. Obviously, okay. Atalanta, Danish. Now, this was partially as well with my original manager.
I knew it would be. I thought it was.
Because obviously, the Danish national team is fantastic for them, and he's going to be obviously lining up in a three-back and everything. However, I still think he would be okay as a fullback. He'd have to do a bit more. He'd have to do probably a lot more defensive work than he would be doing if it was three at the back. But when you look at Villa's current fullbacks, it's not great, lads. Matty Cash, fantastic. I think he's a great right back. Matt Target, I think, is fine. I mentioned it earlier. I think he's okay. Premier League standard for sure, but doesn't excite me, if I'm being quite honest. And Ashley Young is just sitting on the bench.
And
really.
I suppose Tuan Zabi can play there.
Sure, but again, he's off. He's off
holes then, though, isn't it?
In the summer. Now, the other really good thing about Mill is that he covers both sides. He is right-footed, but he plays majority on the left. I think personally he'd be the starting left-back for us, but he is also naturally a right-back who's been, as I said, plying his trade on the left and left wing-back for several years for club and country. So if Cash did get injured on the right, we can play Target left-back and then Mills can go right-back if needed. So he covers both areas. And if we ever go to a right to a three at the back, we can go him going left wing-back, right wing-back, whatever is needed, he can fill it for us. Now, he is very, very attacking.
I was going to say the same. I've just pulled up some of his stats on FB.
Extremely.
Very much of a left midfielder mould.
Now, this is also partially in my idea of if Steven Gerrard was coming in, he wants that attacking fullback. And maybe Lucien Favre would want that as well, depending on how he wants to manage.
It's got a few Timothy Castagne vibes about this signing.
Yes.
It could be a good cover option, but he could be sold on someone better.
He's averaging 3.2 touches in the opposition's penalty area. And he's a fullback, which is quite mad. He is very, very quick as well, it has to be said as well. He's got good recovery pace. if needed, yes. Kind of not the same, because Kyle Walker is a better defender than him. But in terms of recovery pace, similar to Walker. He's only making 2.6 tackles and interceptions per 90, which is okay. It's all right. But again, a lot of that is due to him having to sprint back and kind of get into position. Now, as I said, compared to Target, that's not nowhere near as good. Target's making 4 tackles and interceptions a game. But maybe he'd improve in a 4 at the back system rather than a 3 at the back. And supposedly, he's only £25 million. Supposedly. In the research that I was doing, that's how much that was being rumoured. I think he might cost a little bit more than that.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting shout. It's definitely an interesting shout, and it's one that's been echoed by the Villa Vision on Twitter. Again, going back to John McGod, though, who says here, dreaming, but Guerrero. Shaznat also says Rafa Guerrero. I think that's probably too punchy for us right now, Chris. You got any left-back options floating about?
Who was it that I was touting Rafa Guerrero for on... Oh, it was Newcastle, wasn't it, with their billionaire takeover? Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm not as hell-bent on any of my options as Zach with Mailer.
So you're happy with that? I mean, should we go with Mailer?
I drew up a shortlist. I won't go through them in any great degree of detail, but you can sort of pick them apart if you like. So I was thinking, okay, which Premier League clubs have players who are maybe deserving of more minutes or just aren't getting into starting 11 for any particular reason? I thought Ben Davies might be interesting, but he might be set for a resurgence under Conte. Alex Telles as an attacking option from Manchester United. It feels very much like he's going to be sold in upcoming windows. And I've said it for most sides outside of the top six, but Zinchenko, I think, could be a great option. I know he harbours aspirations of playing in central midfield, but I think Zinchenko, if you guaranteed him first team minutes, would perhaps move. And then there's Gaia at Valencia, and Valencia, you know, are in financial dire straits, and I think he's their captain this season. He's a supremely gifted player, and that would be an extremely ambitious move. But yeah, or, you know, just recall Frederick Gilbert. He's playing really well at Strasbourg. He could be decent cover. He started a couple of seasons ago and it was maybe a couple of years too soon for him. But yeah, he's playing well in Ligue 1. But that's about as far as my conviction goes with wing-back cover.
Do you know what? Just because, I'll be honest with you, Zach presented a very solid case for Mailer being a slightly more attacking option than Target. The ability to cover the right-back slot as well. I'm going to go with Zach's suggestion there of Joaquin Mailer. And I also think central midfield is an area that's clearly tried to be upgraded in the past before my arrival, hence the bid for James Ward-Prowse. The Aston Villa fans that were replying to my tweet pretty much en masse were saying we need another central midfielder. Looking at the current central midfield options, John McGinn, sensational player. Love John McGinn. Yeah. Douglas Luiz. Then we're looking at Marvellous Nakamba. Morgan Sanson hasn't really worked out. Jacob Ramsey does look like an exciting talent. Looks like a very exciting talent to come through the academy. Who are you going to pitch in here first, Zach?
This is where all my money's going, fellas.
Whoa, here we go.
Renato Sanchez.
Before you get into your argument, I want to hear Chris's immediate response to Renato Sanchez.
Oh, fair, okay. I just think Renato Sanchez, injury woes aside, let's pretend he's really fit, yes. Right? Like, what is Renato Sanchez really, really good at? Progressing the ball. I don't think that is something that is lacking in this side, especially having spent £40 million on Buendia, who is going to want to occupy the same sort of spaces as Renato Sanchez. Like, I don't think he's the box to box player that we first thought he would be when, you know, Bayern Munich spent all that cheddar on him. He's played on the wing at Lille. He's played in that sort of a hybrid 8-10 role as well. We saw him play very well for Portugal in a more advanced role at the Euros. So advanced, in fact, it was Bruno Fernandes that he came on for, right? In the second or third game when he was it against France when he sort of helped turn the tide? I think it might have been in the group stages. Never racked up a massive amount of defensive numbers. That might be owing to a lack of physicality because, you know, he can't string 4 or 5 games together. But I just don't think that is where Villa should be putting all their chips.
Yeah. It's an interesting one because, again, only 4 starts this season, Zach, and Chris does make good points there. You know, I'm looking at Now we're talking top 1 percentile for dribbles completed, top 8 percentile for progressive carries, top 12 percentile for progressive passes. So what is your argument to say that he starts, and in what role does he start? Because if John McGinn's in there, does he start alongside McGinn? Does he start as a replacement for McGinn?
Can't is drop he, McGinn.
Is he going to no, play I'm in not, the 10 role? Where is he playing?
I'm not dropping McGinn. I mean, for me, I guess it would depend on what formation. It's either a 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3, obviously depending on what the manager wants to do. And I think he fits. I think he'd be fitting in okay. I agree. Injury record is an issue.
A problem.
It is an issue.
4 starts this season, Zach.
Put it this way, yeah, it's not been great. He's at the beginning of this season, he seems to be averaging about missing. He seems to be missing on average about 15 games a season at the moment through injury, which isn't ideal. I will admit, I do understand that. However, I do think him in a kind of he can be played in either a three where I think he partners John McGinn and Douglas Luiz. Obviously, Douglas Luiz being more of the more of the deeper role, and then you can play your Bailey, your Watkins, Ings, or Buendia as well can play on the right wing. I think he does that. And whilst I agree, his numbers necessarily in front of goal, like only got 1 goal and 4 assists and 29 appearances last season, aren't. Anything to applaud, to be quite honest. I think he would really help that Aston Villa midfield. He's creating 3.5 shot creating actions per 90. And as he's mentioned, the progressiveness of how he is fantastic. I think John McGinn is brilliant at what he does. But I think him partnered next to someone like Renato Sanchez and then both being very dogged, working very hard in that midfield and kind of getting the ball forward to your Leon Baileys and to your Buendias, who can then go and get the assist, essentially, would work really well. £40 million is how much I've kind of got him down here for, because Lille bought him two years ago for £18 million. But his contract is up in 2023. He is also attracting a lot of interest from Wolves at the moment. And I give
£2 million a start. That is Jalab, mate, over the course of a season.
Yeah, Jalab.
I give you guys...
I'm not sold on this one, Jalab. I have to admit, I'm not massively sold on this one, it has to be said. Just looking at more of these fan suggestions here as well, I'm seeing a couple of other styles. I'm seeing the likes of Sander Berge being mentioned by a few people. I'm seeing James Ward-Prowse, which is unrealistic. I'm seeing Idrissi Gueye mentioned. So I think Villa fans at home are looking for a slightly more defensive midfielder to partner Luiz, so that McGinn can play a bit further forward.
Sanchez is averaging about 3.7 tackles interceptions a game. It's not awful. I think it's terrible.
It's not awful. I'm not sold, Chris. If you've got a better midfield option, I would be willing to listen.
Okay, I've gone a little bit more of a conservative option price-wise then. And I sort of agree with the Aston Villa fans that they are missing a lights-out defensive midfielder. Then maybe as a result of getting a defensive midfielder, Douglas Luiz can become a little bit more of a deep-lying playmaker, because at the moment, I think the balance of that midfield is off somewhat. Like, Luiz and McGinn can both defend, but McGinn is, like he is for Scotland, very useful going forward as well. And you want to sort of unleash the shackles on McGinn, I think. And you can do so by bringing in a defensive midfielder. I think Marvelous Nakamba is probably their best defensive presence at the moment. That's because that's what he specialises in, right? He's a little bit of a destroyer. Maybe we can get some more mileage out of him with a better coach, but that's not what I'm going for at current. I've suggested Benjamin Andre from Lille. Like, Lille is struggling now. The manager's gone. They are 4 points off the relegation spots in Ligue 1 at current. He's 31, so I don't think he's going to cost a significant amount. Didn't look when his contract ends, because that's not what I'm about at the moment. And you know what? Since he arrived from Rennes, he has been one of Europe's most consistent defensive midfielders. He's not made below 5 tackles interceptions per 90. Over the course of, 3-4 campaigns. One of those was a title-winning campaign. I think Samare struggled in the first half of last season, but playing next to Benjamin Andre in that double pivot got the best out of him. Hopefully, he can have a similar effect on someone like
2023 is contracts up. I've just looked now. 2023.
Ooh, hello.
Sanchez.
So he might be available for between 15 to 20. You know, Gaultier is gone. Like, Lille's golden age was very, very short, wasn't it? And they might be willing to part ways with some of those championship winning components while their value is still relatively high. I do think
in terms of, I've just got his FB ref numbers up to support your case here, Hamill. In terms of lights out defensive midfielders, there's very few more consistent in Europe. We're talking about top 5 to 10% of European midfielders for pressures, tackles, interceptions, blocks, clearances, aerial duels, passes attempted, progressive part. I think this is a very good candidate for that defensive midfield role. And you've also seen Samare struggle slightly without Benjamin Andre alongside him.
Yes, because I think a lot of Leicester fans anticipated Samare's defensive output to be high, right? Because he came as someone that played in a double pivot, but it's not. He's more of a deep line playmaker, a distributor. That's like when him and Tielemans play together in that double pivot, Wilfred Ndidi's presence is severely lacking, or someone that just loves doing the dirty work, right? But we wouldn't have that problem with Benjamin Andre and someone else if we brought him in at Villa. I just think, let me go back to what they're really bad at this season. Conceding too many shots in good advantageous positions. Mm. They're bad at defending set pieces. Andre maybe is not going to be exceptional with regard to that, but maybe Jonathan Tarr will be if we bring him in. And defending in transition. I just think, listen, he might not play Benjamin Andre. We might not want to deploy him when we are confident of beating said opposition. But when we want to shut a game down, when we want to go 4-2-3-1 and play a quality defensive midfielder, he gives us that option. And I totally forgot that Sanson played for the club, by the way.
Yeah, so did I. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, one thing I said, when would we try to buy him?
I think this is very much an option in either January or in the summer.
Okay, because my only concern is he is 31.
And it's a valid point, but equally, I'm not overly against signing players because the squad is quite well-rounded in terms of age profile at the moment.
Yeah, Joe has also just said he's like in the top whatever percentage for pressures. This is clearly a guy whose fitness has not been found for wanting.
His injury record is absolutely
And you know, we've got the young options in midfield like a Jacob Ramsey as well, who might be able to take a lot from a player like Benjamin Andre. So
he is very important to Lille though.
Yeah, he is, but let's face it, Lille are a selling club, mate, and we've got money.
So Lille will... His price is going to be at a premium because last season's championship win is still in people's recent memory, right? So if they wait another season, his value might halve.
I could be on the phone generalization to get that one sorted fairly quickly. Okay. I do understand the age point raised by Zach, but nevertheless, I think on this option, I'm going to side with Benjamin Andre. Also, that will mean basically I'm going for one from Christopher, one from Zachary in Wacky Mailer, then one a joint agreement on Jonathan Tarr. I'm going to go with Lucien Favre, Chris's selection as head coach. Aston Villa fans, let me know on Twitter whether or not you agree with the selections, what other managers you would like to see appointed, whether or not you're happy with Steven Gerrard, who looks like he is going to get the role. Make sure you get engaged there. Boys, is there anything else you want to discuss about Aston Villa before we leave?
No, but I think it's interesting with regards to the manager situation that we'd all be happy with Hassan Huttl and Graham Potter as well. We should probably include that little caveat.
Yeah, 100%. I know this has been a long old episode. We're approaching like over an hour 5 minutes. So
the good old days.
So, Zach, anything you want to plug very quickly?
Why not check out Snapchat? We give you guys daily content over there.
There we go. Christopher?
If anyone would like to help me move house, just contact me on Instagram.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks very much for watching, everybody.
You've got a fan.
We'll see you later. Bye.